League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
What are we starting with this week?
I'm trying to remember what we do now. We email? No, we don't do that anymore. We review.
No, we're thanking all of our patrons because they voted for this episode topic. So if you would like to become a patron, you can head over to patreon.com/SciGuys and sign up and become a patron and support this show. Very nice.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we do have a question for everyone listening. Head to the YouTube comments and answer this question for us. What season makes you happiest? Autumn, summer, winter, or spring?
Winter.
Winter?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah?
I love just getting all cuddly and cozy and warm.
I like autumn. It's good. Autumn, yeah. You know? It's not too hot, not too cold.
Nice color. Color palette, yeah.
Shall we start the show?
Let's start the show.
Hello and welcome to the SciGuys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jemp, and this time special guest, Noah Fintz.
Hello!
This week, we're talking about trauma and stress.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Fun week.
Look, here's the thing. Excited. I didn't choose it. As always, every month, we throw it to our patrons to vote on a topic, to submit a topic. And this month, PTSD won because they like to see us in pain.
Of course. That's been close a couple times now, hasn't it?
It's been very close a couple times.
Yeah.
There may have been some meddling. No, there's not been any.
Rigged election.
Not many rigged elections, no. No, it's been close a couple times. It was really close, though. Maladaptive daydreaming was a close second, which I think might win next month.
Spoiler for the future.
That also sounds bad. These are both sad things. What's wrong with your viewers? What's wrong with you?
Well, what's wrong with your viewers? Your viewers are sad too.
They like happy things.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
They listen to your songs. They're the saddest songs of all time.
My songs sound happy though. They sound happy.
Yes.
So, what is PTSD?
Post-traumatic stress disorder.
What does that mean?
Not very good for the brain.
It's like when something very traumatic happens, mm-hmm. and it literally changes the structure of your brain, does it not? Something like that. And then it's kind of a thing where like sometimes you get flashbacks. Sometimes you think about your past and you're like, oh, that was dreadful. And that's it.
That's it. That's the end of the show.
Mm.
Cue the outro.
That's it. Sources
in
the description.
Can
you
put the outro in? Yeah, sure. Yeah, so post-traumatic stress disorder. It's kind of in the name. After a traumatic event, you can have a disorder based around stress. So PTSD, it's a trauma and stress-related disorder. It used to be classified with anxiety disorders in the DSM, but in the DSM-5, that was changed. It's no longer classified with anxiety disorders. Wow. And there is a debate on whether it should be classified as an anxiety disorder, as a stress-induced fear response, or as a dissociative disorder, which all of them kind of make sense.
Yeah, does it really matter how it's categorized as long as we know what it is?
Look,
is this like a pointless scientist argument, like the fossil thing?
What are scientists for if not categorizing things?
Yeah, I guess
that's what they—that's their job.
That's true.
That's what they do.
Not good for much else.
Like they either find categories, put stuff into categories, or make up categories to fit stuff in that they don't know where it goes.
Mm.
Right? That's how it works.
I think anything ever could fall into any of those categories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the. Yeah.
Mm. That's mad.
Amazing. Good job, scientists, making all those categories for us. So, as I said, there's a debate on whether it's a dissociative disorder, an anxiety disorder, or a stress-induced fear response. And it kind of makes sense once we get into it, why there is that debate there. This is from the NHS, so I've taken a lot of what I'm saying today directly from the NHS page, because the NHS are really good with this. They've got a lot of good info on it. So if you are worried that you might have PTSD, speak to a doctor. Don't use this episode as a sort of litmus test. Speak to a doctor, get yourself diagnosed.
This is not a like, you, put sorry. Your finger down if you are sad about things that happened in the past. And then at the end of the video, it's like, you have PTSD.
Get your lists out, start checking.
Put your finger down if this triggers you. Put your finger down if this triggers you. Yeah. That is, oh God, no, please don't do that. That is going to be a TikTok challenge. I'm going to be blamed for it.
It's already a thing.
I mean, people showing triggers on...
Oh, that's dreadful.
It's the next TikTok trend. So it is normal to feel traumatized to an extent after a traumatic event. It's
it would make sense.
It kind of makes sense, right?
That works for me.
Yeah.
I've got no opposition to that.
Slot that into your schedule.
Yep. If you got trauma from a non-traumatic event, that'd be weirder.
That happens.
Well,
I mean, okay, here's the thing. A non-traumatic, if you get trauma from a non-traumatic event,
it's traumatic.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was probably. That's what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh no, this completely non traumatic thing has traumatized me. That is actually a thing, by the way.
Phantom people are like trauma.
People genuinely are like, oh man, I can't be traumatized. Nothing traumatic happened to me. And then they maybe go and speak to a therapist and like, oh, that was traumatic. I see.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you should probably feel bad after a traumatic thing happens. Not to be mean, but it's to be expected.
I'm not telling you how to feel. Just how you probably will feel.
You probably will. It's pretty hard to avoid it. And that will naturally probably improve over a few weeks. So just being stressed and having like...
Weeks?
Yeah.
Fuck, I wish it was that quick.
A few hundred weeks.
In a few weeks, you'll be fine.
So
I know that's not what you said.
So it should... naturally alleviate after about 4 weeks or so. But if it doesn't, and this is direct from the NHS, it says, you should visit your GP if you or your child are still having problems about 4 weeks after the traumatic experience or the symptoms are particularly troublesome.
How about 10 years?
You should probably speak to a GP.
I would go see a GP. I mean,
a bit late. This is like, it's like going to the library with a book that's out of date by like 10 years.
Still a book?
Hey,
it's quite a few 4 weeks.
I meant to return this book like 9 years and 48 weeks ago.
Does it still work?
The book?
Yeah.
The book, yeah. I mean,
probably not. You're not working very well, are you? Look at you.
I was talking about books.
The book is a metaphor for you and your mental health.
Well, I think if the book is still readable, there should be no issue.
Okay, let's not. I'm not going to touch that. Let's move on.
This is not the site.
This is the thing. Obviously, they'll ask you about the traumatic event. And just if anyone is going to go to a doctor about this, they're going to ask you to talk. They're going to ask you in detail about sort of if you've experienced a traumatic event. So steel up. Be prepared for that.
That's yeah.
They're not going to... Look, it says...
has to be expected. It's like you break your arm, you go to a doctor. Just by the way, we're going to have a look at your arm. So if you're not comfortable with that, then don't come.
Yeah, but like
obviously they have to.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, obviously they've got to.
Yeah. Just to get better, you have to poke the fire.
Warning triggers.
It's like setting a broken limb, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's gonna hurt a bit, but you know,
yeah.
You want it to heal properly. And they can refer you to a mental health specialist. And apparently it affects about 8% of Americans at some point in their lives. But it also develops in about 1 in 3 people who experience severe trauma. And there are quite a few stats here. I'll just power through them. So apparently about approximately 2/3 of young people are exposed to trauma during childhood. And they could then go on to develop PTSD. This is the thing.
Mm.
Experiencing trauma does not mean that you will absolutely then go on to develop PTSD.
Yeah.
There are some risk factors. You can just get on with it fine, but you could also experience PTSD. Who knows? There's lots of things going on there. By 18, apparently roughly 8% of traumatized young people have met the criteria for a PTSD diagnosis. And then that goes up to 40% in cases of sexual abuse and assault. Trigger warning, by the way. This is a trigger warning for the start of the video.
The whole episode.
This is a trigger warning. We are going to be, not in detail, but mentioning triggers. Just mentioning them. So if reading a trigger warning is fine for you, it'll probably be fine.
Yeah.
But just a heads up. So on top of all of that, PTSD is also associated with worse performance in school, and increase it, like it's related to depression, and other bad things that follow depression, substance abuse, all of those.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm stating the obvious here, but yeah, PTSD is linked to other sadness and destructive behaviors. And apparently, this is a stat that kind of shocked me a little bit. Apparently, childhood trauma and PTSD cost the US about $500 billion annually. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So it says basically the stuff that comes from childhood maltreatment, including PTSD. So it's not just PTSD on its own, but like sort of all of the results of childhood mistreatment can result in a sort of an estimated $500 billion every year cost to the US.
Is that for treatment or is that for, what is that?
This is just the total cost of it apparently. So that would be all of the resulting things. It's not just treatment, but
leave off work and.
Probably crime as well. One would assume.
Wow! Yeah.
I don't have exactly what it covers. The entire, entirely what is included in it. But still, if anything's costing $500 billion a year, it's probably a problem we want to solve.
We want to address it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. So the symptoms. You guys know any symptoms of PTSD?
Flashbacks.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Flashbacks on TV seem very fun, right?
No.
It's like, ooh,
they never do seem very fun on TV.
What's a flashback on TV is when they
remember. Well, it's always flashing back to some big spectacle where it's like some really traumatic event where it's.
Oh, no, I mean.
Oh, like, but not just, that kind of flashback.
No, I just mean like a flashback on TV.
Oh.
Like, as in, like, that's not what I'm saying.
No, what I'm saying is just a flashback on TV. Like, you know, flashback on TV is movies where they remember something that's happened. See, a flashback in real life. It's not quite like that.
No.
It's more like completely reliving an experience again. Not necessarily, you could have the visuals with it, but it's mostly just the feeling is the issue. And we'll get into, we've spoken about why that happens before, but we can get into it a little bit later. But yeah, the symptoms of PTSD can impact your day-to-day life, obviously. I mean, if not just from the actual symptoms themselves, also from the anxiety about the symptoms then happening also. So usually the symptoms will develop within a month after the traumatic event, but in some cases it could be months or years before symptoms start to appear. Ooh, so you could have like this sort of delayed onset of PTSD. So a traumatic thing can happen. You could be like, haha, I escaped you PTSD.
I beat it.
And then months or years later, it comes around with a baseball bat. Like,
you suddenly like, stop you. Repressing it.
Out of nowhere.
Well, not,
or is it usually like sparked by something?
Well, it doesn't.
I imagine it creeps in.
It could creep in. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, it could be sparked by something. Obviously, you could be triggered by something that triggers that sort of episode, or it could be a case of just repressing things and then something kind of, like triggers it in some way.
Yeah.
Or it could be a sort of gentle creep as you kind of like start to deal with it a little bit more. So yeah, that's only in some cases, not in all of them. But you can have long periods where your symptoms are less noticeable. You could have periods where they get a lot worse. Some people can have severe symptoms constantly. It's kind of a mixed bag, really. With PTSD, it's not a case of like you are always going to be awful all the time, but it could be a case of it constantly affecting you.
Mm-hmm.
So there are. A few categories that they've got of PTSD symptoms, but they obviously vary quite widely between different people. So the different categories, you've got intrusive symptoms, that's like flashbacks and intrusive thoughts or physiological reactions. You've got avoidance responding, which is avoiding, like basically that's what you'd think of as repressing memories. So avoiding thinking about thoughts or memories or things that remind you of the trauma. You've got negative changes in cognition and mood. So that's like persistent fear, anger, basically any sort of strong negative emotion surrounding that sort of the sort of trauma. And that can, and then the kind of depression falls into this as well in terms of the sort of negative nihilism. That kind of comes with depression. So you can see how that kind of could lead you into a depression there. There's also dissociative feelings that fall under this as well. And then there's the other one, which you're not to laugh at. It's increased arousal and reactivity. So arousal as in...
Oh, you're like, you're more touchy.
Yeah, being on edge, yeah. You know, jumpy. Yeah, so hypervigilance is one of those things. Exaggerated startle responses. Essentially, if someone taps you on the shoulder and you turn around and crack chop them in the neck, you know, that's an exaggerated response, right? Mm-hmm. It's the kind of like, it's the sort of stereotypical response that you'd see on TV where, say, someone's come back from war and they're like jumpy as hell, as all hell, you know?
Yeah.
So those are the four main categories. So I'll just go through how the NHS describes it, because they do a pretty good job of kind of listing out all the symptoms. So the most common symptom is the sort of re-experiencing. And that's what you think of. That's basically your flashbacks, your nightmares, just sort of reliving the event, essentially. And you can, the thing is, I guess TV has kind of given people the idea that this is a very visual and like sort of auditory thing. It's like a hallucination where I'm, from what I've seen, it seems to be more about feelings. Right, so you can have like the physical sensations, like pain, feeling sick, shaking, sort of negative thoughts, or literally feeling the sort of emotions and experience the way you did the first time, right? And the reason that is, we've spoken about this before, that the amygdala, when you're in sort of stressful or traumatic situation, the amygdala is a part of your brain that kind of takes over to set down memories. During those situations, and basically if you've got PTSD, it can basically kind of trigger that again, and you'll relive that memory very vividly, essentially, because a different part of your brain essentially takes over and says, this is my time, that's my time to shine. I'm gonna make sure that this doesn't happen again.
Remember this?
Yeah, you remember? You don't want that happen again. No. Yeah, so you can also, like, re-experiencing, that also, like, includes sort of having the constant negative thoughts, sort of the survivor's guilt as well, the sort of, like, oh, why me? Oh, what could I have done? What would have happened? And then you've got avoidance and emotional numbing. That's trying to avoid being reminded of the event, and avoiding certain people or places that remind you of the trauma, or just avoiding talking to anyone about it. So, I mean, it's basically what it says in the tin. You stop, like, you numb yourself emotionally, but also you try and isolate yourself from
cut off
the things,
any reminder, or
anything that might trigger you.
Yeah.
So some people will just try and switch off their feelings altogether, to not have to feel anything, because if you're feeling it, it's feeling bad. And obviously that can lead to you becoming, as the NHS says, lead to you becoming isolated and withdrawn. And they might also give up on pursuing activities they used to enjoy, basically kind of falling into a depression.
Yeah, I'm just, every time I hear a new symptom, I'm like, surely this could apply to anybody that's had anything bad happen to them. Or is it like...
That's PTSD, my friend.
Oh, well, yeah, but, well, surely everyone has it then.
No.
Maybe not.
No.
Well, you're everyone. Just like, you avoid thinking about the bad thing that happened. Like, yeah, like, why would you not? Feels bad. Like, is that not just like a thing that happens?
This is like...
Noah finds out he has PTSD.
This is like...
Everyone does this, right?
This is like when we did the Fantasia episode, and I was like, oh yeah, so, you know, some people can see images in their head and other people can't. And both Luke and Jap were like, I can't see things in my head.
No, like, we're all the same.
Does anyone see things? No. People like obviously like avoiding it for a bit, like for up to sort of about 4 weeks or so, is considered normal. But these symptoms lasting longer than that is part of what sort of gets it classified as PTSD.
Is there anything about like the statistics of the amount of people that have had a traumatic event, how many of them get PTSD?
Yeah, so what did I say?
Surely it's like most of them.
No, 1 in 3 people that experience severe trauma.
1 in 3?
I said that 5 minutes
ago.
Yeah, it's just lots of numbers though, isn't it? I kind of zoned out.
You heard numbers, you're like, oh, this isn't for me, I'll switch off.
I would have thought it'd be more than a third.
Severe.
A third is quite high, though.
I mean, I've seen up to 50% as well.
Yeah,
it depends on the. It depends on. It really depends on what you're talking about. But that's severe trauma, right? So that'd be the stuff that, if you think of any sort of like classic, oh, this will give you PTSD. That's that's kind of what's classed into severe trauma, like war, experiencing sort of like torture. They always talk about torture, which, like,
What percentage of the population has actually been tortured?
No, honestly, this is there is so much talk about torture when it comes to PTSD, which really is unsettling because it.
It's probably very war based. It was probably researched a lot after wars, isn't it? Because that's probably.
You realize the U.S. tortures people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's
within the last 2 decades. They're still doing that.
They've been dishing out PTSD left, right, and center.
Is there anything about those 2/3 that don't get PTSD from trauma?
Well,
like, how is that avoided? Like.
I'm going to go into it in a bit, but the thing is that it could be an episode of its own because there are different ideas, but I don't think we've hammered down this is specifically what stops people.
Okay.
You know, I mean, whenever we talk about mental health stuff, it's always a case of like, we've got some idea, but brain tough.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing you can't really figure out concretely.
Yeah.
Brains work differently. We don't know why.
Exactly. Yeah. So, there's also avoidance and emotional numbing, which we've spoken about. Basically avoiding stuff. It's kind of similar to depression in that sense. And then there's the hyper arousal that we've already spoken about, which is it can also be sort of irritability, outbursts, insomnia, and trouble with concentrating. And this is reading this. It's like reading all of these. This is what is very frustrating when it comes to like realizing how. We classify mental health disorders
because it's so general.
Yeah, look, this is the thing. Obviously, we do have diagnostic criteria, so diagnosing people, like, there are differences. I'm not saying they're all the same, but gosh, are a lot of these symptoms similar to depression or similar to ADHD?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Like, when I got diagnosed with ADHD, some of the questions were just like, anybody could answer yes to them because it's like, do you ever lose concentration? Mm-hmm. Do you have trouble sitting still? It's like, yes, but somebody could just have trouble sitting still and be completely neurotypical.
Yeah, but if you
take off this amount of them, but then
I think you're thinking of this in a flawed way, right? You could say, well, somebody could do this and be entirely neurotypical, but the sort of definition of not being neurotypical, of being neurodivergent, is taking off like a certain number of those.
Yeah.
It's
not concrete.
It's not like we've got an innate like neurodivergence sort of like brain scan and we're using this to get an idea of the brain scan. No, it's a case of like, well, here, look, we've decided that the category for neurotypical is the people that don't check all these boxes, and the ones that are neurodivergent do check all these boxes.
Check quite a few of them.
Yeah, they check a certain number.
Yeah.
It's like saying, oh, well, like, you know, that's not a chair. You can sit on it, but it's not a chair. Well, a chair is, if we say a chair is anything you can sit on, and that is a chair.
Yeah.
Right?
Horse.
Sure. Yeah, a horse is a chair, right? Like, it's tough. It is tough to, it can be tough to wrap your head around, but I think we had a really good conversation about this in the episode with Dodie, the DPD episode, talking about how sort of when it comes to mental health disorders, they're not real in the sense that like we have come up with sort of ways of sort of classifying these patterns.
Well, we're just grouping symptoms
I mean, there are obviously like it's more robust than that. It's not just a case of like you seem sad. Depression. there are specific things that differentiate different disorders, but obviously because they can be comorbid as well, like different symptoms can seem to sort of bleed into each other. But we don't worry, we do have ways of sort of like determining, okay, well, this is PTSD, that's not PTSD.
Yes. Sort
of thing. Yeah. And then there's also complex PTSD. Have you guys heard of complex PTSD?
Yes. It's when traumatic things happen over a long period of time. So it's more than just like one trauma thing. It's just like a whole bunch of bullshittery, fuck uppery.
They can be quite small things that you don't really think too much about. But as they build up, you develop PTSD. And you're like, when did that happen?
Worries me that both of you have such a solid knowledge of this one particular aspect.
No, I'm just curious. What would there be different symptoms, or is it just that it's harder to manage?
Well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
The symptoms of complex PTSD, they're similar to PTSD, but they can also they can include feelings of shame or guilt, difficulty controlling your emotions, periods of dissociation or loss of concentration, headaches, dizziness, chest pain, stomach aches, isolation, relationship difficulties, destructive or risky behavior such as self-harm, alcohol misuse, or drug abuse, and also thoughts of unaliving, all of that kind of stuff. All of that, it is similar to PTSD, but if you think it, right, put it this way. PTSD is usually surrounding like a sort of singular event, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas with complex PTSD, it is more nebulous. So there could be, let's say the triggers for it could be more varied than and less specific even, because it's not this one singular event. It could be a traumatic relationship with a parent, for example, right? So any sort of anything that reminds you of that parent, or anything that even sort of triggers you into thinking, oh, this is the way that person used to act, could be like, oh no, you've got yourself into a sort of loop there. Whereas with sort of PTSD, with sort of non-complex PTSD, it's more a case of like, it's usually
this one bad thing happened.
Yeah, like for example, in the book that I was reading, it used sort of 9/11 as an example.
Yeah,
right. Like that is a very specific thing. Whereas
you know the direct source of the trauma.
Yeah. Whereas my uncle used to be mean to me. Diminish it. Like just as an example, my uncle used to be physically abusive. Is a much less sort of distinct singular event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
And also it could not just be that, that could also lead you into being traumatized in other ways from other people and having poor relationships with cause. Yeah, there's lots of complex PTSD lives up to its name in that it's complex. But it also says that it could take years for the symptoms of complex PTSD to be recognized. It could affect a child's behavior if it happens in childhood. And adults with complex PTSD could lose their trust in people and feel separated from other people as well. Because if it's a long term case of sort of abuse, it's like, oh, I can't trust people because this sort of thing. It says here that complex PTSD is it's considered to be more severe if the traumatic event happened early in life, if it was caused by a parent or carer, if the person experienced trauma for a long time, and if the person was alone during the trauma, and if there's still contact with the person responsible for the trauma.
I should have read about this before I came on.
I asked you. I asked you.
It's fine.
So the treatment of complex PTSD, it's very similar to the treatment of PTSD, it's essentially sort of different therapies. We'll get into the treatment of PTSD later.
Yeah.
But it's different therapies, but because people with complex PTSD often find it difficult to trust other people, they can usually be given more therapy sessions. Because they need more time to build trust with the therapist.
They have struggles at trusting people, and you want them to go to therapy where they indulge you in the most secret moments of their lives.
Hello, stranger, I'll tell you everything.
Literally.
And also they're often offered continuing support after their treatment after their treatment ends.
Yeah.
This is great, because honestly, you'd have thought that in this country, the way that we usually deal with things, it might have been a case of, okay, you get four sessions and then the person will leave you abruptly forever and you'll never...
You'll be banned.
That's it. Forever. You're not allowed to come back.
It's literally what happened in my school. I had counseling sessions at school, and as soon as the hour bell rung, they were like, all right, off to class. And I was like, I'm having a panic attack. They're like, off to class, we'll just sit downstairs for 5 minutes after class. And they had to call my teacher to come get me.
Why don't you have
time.
A deep breath and a nice cup of tea?
Take a sip of water.
Do you know what's so embarrassing? Walking into a class full of people that you don't really know and aren't really friends with, and having crying tears down your face and having them all look at you. It's so awkward.
It's weird that they treated therapy sessions like music lessons.
Yeah. Literally.
Yeah.
Right?
It's I'm sat here shivering so much the desk is vibrating. It's distracting all the children and you want me to sit there.
Oh, sorry, it looks like trauma time is over.
Yeah.
It's now time for you to go to history class.
Literally. Ridiculous.
Yeah, no, the UK does not deal with counselling or therapy very well sometimes. No. Doesn't mean don't do it. Absolutely go through it. It's just that some places don't have quite the funding to deal with it properly.
Yeah.
People with complex PTSD, like I said, find it difficult to trust other people, so they're given... That's where the kind of difference in treatment often lies. That's basically everything about complex PTSD. Other than obviously the treatment can also involve help with any addictions that you might have or any depression that you might have as a result of... as a result of complex PTSD.
Is it kind of like, well, I guess there isn't like a drug for PTSD, but you'd go on like antidepressants or anti-anxiety. There's ones particularly for PTSD.
Well, there's two drugs that are specifically sort of legally prescribed for PTSD, and then there's others that are used off-label.
And they're not antidepressants or anti-anxiety meds?
Off the top of my head, I can't remember what they are, but they do use antidepressants to treat PTSD.
Yeah.
They are antidepressants. paroxetine, sertraline are the two that are licensed specifically for the treatment of PTSD. And there is amitriptyline and phenelazine. Whatever. How's chemicals.
Spell it out. Sound it out.
P-H-E-N-E-L-Z-I-N-E.
Phenelzine. Phenelzine.
Whatever.
Phenelzine.
Phenel Williams.
Who needs your phenelzine when you can just try and say a phenelzine? And no more depression for you. What a fun word to say.
my ADHD med is called Zagatin.
Ooh.
Does that sound great?
That does sound like an ADHD
Zagatin.
Medication.
Zagatin sounds like the villain of a Star Trek episode.
I was thinking Pokemon, but that also works. Zagatin, yeah.
Zagatin sounds like a Fakemon, right? It sounds like, it doesn't sound quite Pokemon-y enough. It sounds like a Pokemon name that a fan would come up
Digimon.
With.
Digimon.
Yeah.
Yeah, Fakemon.
Yeah. Zagatin. It sounds like a dirty word.
Zagatin XL.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, that sounds like something different.
I think that should be your what is it? Your stripper drag name. That's it. Same thing.
Stripper.
Zagatin XL.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, Zagatin XL. Zagatin XL. Yeah.
I'd say drag's the opposite of stripping because you're putting on...
I was thinking that.
You're putting on things.
They've got a similar vibe though. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, they've got a similar
yeah.
thing to them. Quality. Yeah. I suppose, yeah, like you said, one is just the other in reverse.
Yeah.
Good job. So what are the causes of PTSD?
Trauma.
Traumatic could, things.
I guess
trauma and time, silly.
Could it be trauma and then no appropriate treatment for that trauma? But also could there be maybe like a genetic, you could be predisposed to having PTSD?
Yeah, but we have seen some, there's some evidence of sort of genetic predisposition. There's lots and lots of different theories. I looked in my psychopathology book and there were too many, and I decided that is an episode topic in and of itself. So that can stay there. No, there's lots of different sort of models and ideas that we've got for how trauma can turn into PTSD.
Yeah.
But there are different risk factors. So I'll go through those first, and then we can talk about the... Well, actually, first, well, let's talk about the types of events that can lead to PTSD, then I'll talk about the risk factors.
Yeah.
So... Obviously, a traumatic experience. So anything that's sort of like particularly stressful, frightening, or distressing, it can cause a sort of traumatic response, I guess. And this is a non-exhaustive list of types of events that can lead to PTSD. Non-exhaustive because, boy, we'd be here all year listing.
Let me get my checklist.
Yeah. So this is just from the NHS, and I've added in a couple. From other places as well. Serious accidents, assault, any kind of a sort of assault, abuse, including childhood or domestic, exposure to traumatic events at work, including remote exposure, serious health problems, such as being admitted to intensive care, so that could also include getting cancer, or any other sort of like, any any other serious diagnosis, yeah. going into major surgery, anything like that. Childbirth experiences, like the sad ones, you know. Yeah. Oh. War and conflict, torture.
That would do it.
That'll do it. Yeah.
Conflict in general, yeah. That makes lots of sense, I'd say. Yeah.
Major conflict.
Torture, loss of a loved one, and
God,
yeah, that's from the book
off
as well.
Quite a few.
That's the saddest list I've ever heard.
The loss of a loved one here. The reason that I'm bringing that up in particular is because I want to point out that it doesn't need to be sort of life threatening. You don't need to feel like your life is at risk. It could just be a case of
bad thing happen.
Bad thing happen. Brain go boom.
Yeah.
Very good. No, not good. Very bad. Very bad. And we like this is the thing. We don't fully know why some people get PTSD and others don't. But there are some factors that make people more likely to develop PTSD. So if you've had depression or anxiety before, you're more likely to develop PTSD, unfortunately, if you don't get much support. So if you've not got a proper support network, that can also lead you to being more likely to get PTSD. This kind of falls into the model of dealing with trauma. I'm not going to name it sort of specifically, but there's kind of this idea of like how you deal with trauma, like processing those events, improperly processing them or trying to repress them or dissociating, like it can lead to PTSD.
Makes it worse.
Yeah. I mean, and this is the thing, speaking about DPD and DID, any of these sort of dissociative disorders, a lot of them, I mean, the main sort of theories for how they come about is through a traumatic event.
Mm-hmm.
Because one way that the sort of psyche, and the sort of brain can deal with trauma is to say, haha, not happening to me. No. You thought it was happening to me, but in fact, I am not me. Therefore, it can't be happening to me. But if you're experiencing the trauma and I'm me, then who's driving the body? sorry, don't.
Please come back on our show.
So there's that. Like, there's different, obviously, the reason I bring this up, because there's different ways that the sort of brain or mind can deal with trauma. One of those ways is sort of repressing. One of those ways is sort of dissociating. And you can have a sort of mixture of these things. And PTSD there's the idea that kind of results from improper processing of trauma.
I'm so smart. I said that earlier.
Yeah, you did. Good job.
Gold star.
Yay.
So there could also be a genetic factor to PTSD.
Yeah.
But then, for example, having a parent with mental health problems is thought to increase your chances.
No.
No way.
Weird.
Yeah.
That's mad.
Yeah, well, this is the thing as well. Like, obviously, if you've had depression or anxiety in the past, or if you're at greater risk for depression or anxiety, is basically what it's saying, your brain doesn't not necessarily deal with trauma in the most effective way, or that sort of trauma could trigger basically a sort of depression.
Are there actually people out there that don't have issues like that? Because I fail to believe that I just surround myself with mentally ill people.
I do,
but...
That one friend of mine.
Yeah, but he's an anomaly. Yeah, but he's an anomaly, right?
No, he is...
I don't think there are that many people that don't have those issues.
I mean, well, not now after, a pandemic, but generally, yeah.
Oh, no, but even before then.
No, trust me, yeah. Yeah, there are people that aren't mentally ill. They are out there existing. I don't understand. This is the thing. I don't understand. I don't know where they are. I don't know what they're doing, but they're out there existing.
They're out there having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they're just not on the internet. Maybe that's why they're so.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Seriously though, it's shocking because when you look at the statistics, it's like, well, how many people are just mentally healthy? And thinking about it, you're like, so wait, hold on. What you're telling me is that some percentage of the population of the world can just do stuff.
Well, my view of it, obviously backed by nothing, but I feel like there's probably just a bigger population of people that do have some type of mental illness, but that for some people it's just significantly worse. Because I don't know. I just can't picture that there are people that don't have those issues.
As in, well, no, most people touching... get the symptoms to an extent.
Yeah.
Yeah, not necessarily the...
There's two ways of viewing illness. what you're touching on. There's the first thing, we've spoken about this before, is that with most disorders, it's not a case of what the heck are you doing? This is totally abnormal behavior. It's just normal behavior to an abnormal
degree.
Destructive degree. Yeah. So even dissociation, right? You dissociate, there are normal periods of sort of dissociation. When you wake up like kind of, and you feel like, where am I? What is happening? What is the world? That's dissociation.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can dissociate slightly, like walking, like, you know, walking into a room, being like,
what did I come here for?
Yeah. Like, where am I? What's going on? okay. And then it all comes back. These are all normal things that your brain does. Being sad, it's very normal.
Yeah.
Right? Forgetting stuff, it's very normal. Brain's supposed to forget stuff. Otherwise, too much stuff in the brain. Feeling anxious? Well, if there's a tiger chasing you, anxiety will probably help you not be eaten by a tiger. Well, probably not. But
a tiger chasing you would be quite cute. You got big fluffy paws.
How big do you think a tiger's paw is?
Very, very big.
Can you just show the camera how big you... I just want to see how big you think it is.
Well, I'm too small to express the full length of a tiger.
Just with your hands, with the paws.
The paws?
Yeah, the paws.
Oh, the paws of a tiger, probably that big.
Wait, are you including the claws, the fingers?
No, because they're tucked in it. Are they tucked in? Are they retractable, like house cats?
I don't know.
I've completely let it.
No, hold on. Let's find out. This is fine. Let's find out if tigers have retractable
imagine
claws.
Imagine if tortoises had retractable claws, and every time they wanted to walk, they just go. Oh, they do. Oh my god. Arms and legs. Oh my god. I used to have to clean around the like arm holes and the leg holes and the neck holes because you're supposed to wash the tortoise. We wash it once a week, and you have to get right in there.
Mum said it's your turn to wash the tortoise.
Literally, and it's difficult because they don't like being washed, so they tuck their head in. You're like, no, come pull it back out so I can wash the neck.
It's a lot like washing my... Anyway, tiger's claws are retractable.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Good. This is the thing. That what you're saying there about the whole idea of like, oh, everyone has kind of these symptoms or everyone kind of has this. Okay, to a degree, yeah, people will get sad over things, but it's dealing with it in a way that doesn't sort of significantly impact your day-to-day functioning. Like that is generally the sort of benchmark usually, right? Like for OCD, the benchmark for OCD is having those compulsions that like
affect your life.
I think it's take up at least an hour a day.
It's something like that.
You spend like an hour or 2 hours a day on compulsions, then that's one of the...
Oh, there's a time limit.
It's not like... I don't think it's the strictest thing, but that is one of the diagnostic... That's in the diagnostic criteria. Read my diagnostic... My book about like psychopathology. It's interesting.
Yeah, I want to.
It's interesting looking at the diagnostic criteria because what you realize is that with a lot of things, it's a case of, well... To diagnose you with this, you have to rule out all of these other things first.
Yeah.
And then also, to diagnose you with it, another key point is it needs to make you feel bad and impact your life.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel okay about it, or you're doing it for religious reasons, you're fine. If it's
what do you do for religious reasons that coincides with OCD?
I don't know. Like religious compulsions. I don't know. I don't know. But
we've talked about it a bit.
Yeah, we've spoken about this. Look, there are religious ceremonies that religion comes up enough in these sort of diagnostic criteria that it is like almost a running joke at this point. It is the get of jail free card.
Are you mentally ill or religious?
Well, or both. So yeah. Like I feel like when it comes to most people being sort of like mentally ill, I think most people aren't. I think most people have can have similar experiences, but to a normal sort of or non-life impacting degree.
Yeah,
which is baffling to me.
Sure, but I still don't believe it. So
it's hard to believe.
Yeah,
obviously there will be some number of people that go undiagnosed, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously there will be some number of people, but. Yeah, I do
there
find
there are people out there who are just genuinely fine.
Yeah, they're just
crazy.
They can just wake up on time on a day and be like, "I'm going to do this," and then they do it, and that's it.
That's
the only barrier in the way of them like doing a thing is kind of whether they want to do it or not, you know, rather than all of the brain stuff we got going on.
Yeah,
it's a superpower.
Really, we're
appreciate
just,
it.
We're just being held back. This is the thing. Mentally ill people are too powerful, right? God had to nerf them. That's why you're you're mentally ill because you're so much that if you weren't, everyone else would be quaking, trembling. Yeah. So there might be a genetic factor in get PTSD. There's also this is I'm not going to get too deep into this, but in my book it did say that ethnic groups can differ quite significantly in the prevalence of PTSD.
Mm.
So it says basically white Caucasian disaster victims. So I'm just going to quote this here. Caucasian disaster victims show lower prevalence rates than Latinos or African Americans for PTSD. And these differences cannot be entirely explained simply by differences in frequency of exposure to traumatic experiences. And it is interesting, right? My idea on this, just off the top of my head, my hypothesis for this would be that, this is going to sound bad. Don't get mad at me. White people probably experience less trauma, just in general. Probably.
Yeah, but also surely it's like environmental. Like, sure, they could have like one traumatic event. I don't know. I just feel like the fact that racism is a thing.
Yeah, that's what
like,
I mean.
And
yeah.
The fact that like people have like, people that aren't white are treated differently to people that are white.
Yeah.
Like, of course, there's going to be a significant level of mental illness when you're seen as a second-class citizen.
Yeah, so like, let me expand on that. So when I say white people experience less trauma, what I mean is, even with these sort of, like, disaster events, there are more barriers in the way for Latino and African-Americans than there are for white people, generally, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. So we've looked at sort of the risk factors here being lack of support systems. Given the high incarceration rates of Latinos and African Americans,
yeah.
It is safe to assume that there is like sort of less family support there, probably for on average for African Americans and Latinos than there are for Caucasian people, in terms of support not just from family and friends, but also financial support that could be more difficult to get in terms of work. That like if you have a lower paid job or you've got like you work in a certain industry, then it might be harder to get money to receive the appropriate support.
Yeah.
Healthcare is another thing.
That's all what I was going to bring up. Wouldn't white people on average have easier access to better treatment at all?
And does that not exist in the UK as well? I think absolutely.
But especially in childbirth.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. 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 And on top of that, I don't know whether this takes into account sort of previous sort of mental health issues, but it's, you're probably likely to see a higher incidence of certain mental health issues in sort of basically not white people because again of all the racism and lack of access to care and all of that. So
yeah, it's just irritating that these statistics are out there and it's kind of obvious why, but it's so easy for people to be just like, oh, it's because they were born that race and they're inherently different. It's genetics. Like, they're genetically inferior.
Yeah, black people are genetically inferior. But that's why they get PTSD.
It's so irritating when, like, you see statistics like that because I'm like, oh, I get it. But they're so easy to just, like, completely miss.
Yeah, because it has to be genetics or environment. And I feel like a lot of people just jump straight to genetics.
Yeah, exactly.
My favorite racist is a racist that uses stats.
Yeah.
Because it's much easier
when they talk about fucking police brutality and all that. Well, actually, African Americans commit more crime. It's like, why do you think that? Do you think they're doing it because they're bad people? Because they're put in difficult environments?
The reason that my favorite racist is one that uses stats is because
they think they're smart.
They don't understand the stats.
No, yeah, because it's so easy to... Because it's far... It's like... it's they use stats, right? To separate themselves from their racism often, right? They're saying, the stats prove this. And it's so easy to just... Take out the stats because, like, well, this is how you're using them wrong.
Yeah.
So you're left with no stats. Yeah,
there's an assumption.
And now you've got to admit that you're racist, which puts them on the back foot. Whereas when it's a racist that is just an out and out racist, that's just like, I think black people are inferior because they are. Yeah. I don't need any stats. They just are. Right. Like we need like blacks and whites are different, and we need to separate ourselves for a better society. With them, I'm like, well, where do I start with you? You're absolutely nutcase. Like, you know?
It's like with LGBT stuff. It's like, well, statistically this and this and this with like gay people. And I'm like, well, I'd rather come up against a homophobe who just hates gay people than a homophobe who thinks they're like homophobic for a good reason.
But I disagree. I disagree on that because I feel like if they think they're whatever for a good reason, it is far easier to make them look like an
idiot. Change their mind.
Yeah.
Would look like an idiot. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and because you basically just need to show them how they're misinterpreting.
Yeah.
Bear in mind, there could be the people that just use stats incorrectly because they don't care.
Yeah.
I've seen this so many times
I'm not naming names. But
no, I know. There's been people that I've seen that just say a stat and you're
just
like,
make things up.
Oh, this is why it's wrong. And they're like, they say the stat again.
I don't care.
Yeah, but it's wrong.
Did you know that 70% of people that are trans are FTM?
That's not
that true.
No, it's not true. It's
not true.
It's just, I just said it. I heard someone say it.
Do you know that?
Just say things.
Actually, 60% of stats are made up on the spot. You know that?
Is that
crazy,
true?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
People in the audience are not gonna. Are not gonna. That's a joke.
Up.
That's a made up,
up
stat. Yeah. No. Seriously, though. It is interesting the way that science is misused by racists, particularly transphobes. Actually, I find that.
Yeah.
Morbidly interesting. Like, obviously the societal implications for trans people is awful, but like
super cool statistics though.
No, from a standpoint of like watching literally watching how TERFs will
froth
take
at the mouth, like,
the British TERFs always have their stats
well,
ready.
They've always got science backing them up. I'm doing a video right now responding to specifically this TERF that seems super like sort of super
super
reasonable, yeah. believable, and I'm like, wow, I would totally like this woman and her points if they weren't so blatantly transphobic and lying.
Yeah. Awful.
So I was going through her podcast and I was like looking at the, you know, all the stuff that she brought up, and it's just such a blatant disregard for science. Honestly, yeah. Like you've got this thing where she said she had a go at trans people for using anecdotal evidence to say trans people feel good after transition. Like, oh, this worked with my friend. But then
there are literally statistics about that.
There are stats. But 5 minutes beforehand, she said a lot of people feel like gender dysphoria when they're younger and just grow out of it. Like this person I do my podcast with. She realized that biology was bigger than she is, and she decided she would be a woman.
That's not anecdotal.
Exactly. And the reason, and you know that the reason that she used that anecdotal evidence is because when you look at the actual stats of detransitioners, the highest stat you're going to get is like 8%.
Yeah.
That is the highest, that is the top end.
From where?
I'm not saying that.
It's literally less than 1%.
I'm not saying that those are reliable stats. I'm saying that the highest stat you're going to get,
right,
even from like unreliable sources,
yeah,
is 8%, which is
no.
Like,
I've heard higher than that.
I'm going off of Wikipedia. Yeah. The Wikipedia range is from under 1 to 8%. Mm. But yeah, like they just complete disregard for.
Oh, I've heard 97%
of young people,
but that includes anyone who's ever questioned their gender, I think, or anyone who's ever been vaguely gender non-conforming.
Hey, yeah. Hey, have you ever been? Were you a tomboy?
Yeah, literally that.
Ooh, look at that. Let's tick this off as a non-trans. There we go. Mm-hmm. Like,
remember my tomboy days.
Now it's
just boy days.
It's just boy days.
Tom days.
Yeah, so look, we could do a whole episode on the differences in sort of susceptibility to PTSD.
Mm.
We could, because there are different models for how it might sort of work, all of this sort of stuff. And to be honest, this episode is already going to be long enough as it is. So let's just move on. Maybe we'll do that at some point in the future. Let us know if you want us to do it. Head into the comments and tell us. Or head over to our Patreon, where you can submit it as an actual topic.
Yeah, make them wait for it.
Yeah. Then you can get people to vote on it. How cool is that? Wielding democratic power. So why does PTSD develop? We don't know. We've got a few ideas. I'm just gonna quickly rattle through, I think, three. These are from the NHS. So... there's the survival mechanism. Is that the symptoms of PTSD, the idea is that the symptoms of PTSD are a result of some this sort of intrinsic, instinctive mechanism to help you survive further traumatic experiences. That's what I was saying earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of touched on that, where your brain is like, ah, bad thing happened.
Mm.
Now you stay away from bad thing, you silly monkey.
That makes sense for me. That makes sense.
I mean, yeah, but...
You got stabbed, stay away from knives.
Well, I was gonna
you're
say,
not going to get stabbed again. Like,
I thought you were saying it makes sense for you. And I'm like, I don't know how you could stay away from any
from
of
what?
That. From any of that. But like, yeah, good job. This is the thing. No, it does make sense, right? Like, oh no, a bear attacked our small sort of like our small like sort of like family group because we left food out.
Yeah, don't go to your family.
So don't. So don't leave food out anymore. I mean, like evolutionarily that makes sense, but when the issue is like I witnessed a terrorist attack, well, don't go witnessing any more of those. Okay, brain, but
stay away from terrorism. Like, lesson learned.
Thank you, brain. That was very useful.
Download Walk Safe. Yeah. Every time I leave the house, I get a notification when I'm in a car. It's like, stabbing, 80 meters away.
Yeah, I've got that app. One time I accidentally reported a stabbing and there wasn't one.
You did?
Yeah.
You were sat in the living room.
In our house, yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was in this house.
Well, do you know what you should have done?
For a couple of days afterwards, it said someone had been stabbed here.
I mean, you should have just followed through, right? Like, you should have done it.
I didn't say stabbed, it said knife crime.
Yeah.
Very ominous.
What you could have done then is stolen one of Evan's knives.
Mm.
That's a knife crime, yeah. Right?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah. There you go. So that's the survival mechanism idea, the sort of being on edge, you know, that hypervigilance can help you to, like, wah. Yeah. Avoid any threats in the future. I was trying to find the words. It's like that sort of Percy Jackson thing, where in Percy Jackson, you know, he's got ADHD because it's his reflexes. He's constantly, he's got the fighting spirit. He's constantly able to fight. That's why he's got
ADHD. His ADHD means that he can fight.
Yeah.
Really?
And his dyslexia is because his brain is wired for ancient Greek, except in this case.
That's not dyslexia.
You don't know.
Are dyslexics really good at Greek?
You don't know that. Ancient Greek.
No. Yeah.
Jesus. No, but it's what my point is that it's the similar sort of idea that, like, while this might be sort of fine-tuned and helpful for one kind of way of life, in modern life, being constantly on edge is probably not good if you work in, say, I don't know, a factory where nothing happens. Right?
I have ADHD so that I can clean for 8 hours in a row without eating.
Yeah, but then go 6 weeks without doing it. Yeah, you
know. Yeah. It's like sure, I could rationalize anything. Like, fine, but
when he gets around to it.
Look, now I haven't hunted or gathered in quite some time, but when I do hunt and or gather, oh boy, I will be hunting or gathering.
I'm going to do so much hunting and gathering.
I'm going to hunt and gather the shit out of this forest. Like, you just pick all of the berries.
The entire forest.
it's barren.
Bear.
There's the high adrenaline levels. So studies show that people with PTSD have abnormal levels of stress hormones. And so essentially, apparently people with PTSD continue to produce high amounts of basically your stress hormones, even when there's no danger. And that might be responsible for the numbed emotions and the hypervigilance that people with PTSD experience. Because obviously, you know, when you're in fight or flight, like, you don't necessarily feel pain as much as you do. Like, you know, that sort of, when you want adrenaline running through you.
Yeah.
And then you realize later, you're like, oh man, I hurt myself.
Yeah.
Whoops. Then there's changes in the brain. Like you were talking earlier, like PTSD can literally change your brain. Different parts of your brain, the sort of size of it can change, if that makes sense.
Really?
Well, not change so much as be different than the sort of normal brain.
Is that why my head didn't grow?
It's just genetic. You come from a family of small heads.
Grew too much.
What if you give him some head?
Okay. I'm so upset. Why would you say that? Now my brain is... Talk about PTSD.
So...
Enough head.
I'm finished, thank you.
So... Yeah, people with PTSD, there's parts of your brain involved in emotional processing. Those look different than the sort of normal brain. So the main parts of the brain that are sort of affected, the hippocampus, I think they're sort of the frontal lobes as well, the frontal lobe of the brain, and also the amygdala. There's changes in these parts of the brain that are present in people with PTSD. So the hippocampus is smaller in people with PTSD, and the idea is that this sort of change in the brain is related to sort of fear, anxiety, memory problems, and flashbacks. That's another thing I didn't mention about PTSD. You can have issues with memory, the same as with depression, you can have memory issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I was going to ask about that. But I assume not everybody with PTSD will have like these parts of their brains that are smaller.
Well, this is the thing. It's very difficult when it comes to sort of like brain,
yeah,
brains, you know, like, because it all depends on what you class as a sort of normal brain, and there's sort of variations, but I mean, on average, these parts are smaller in people with PTSD, right?
So, but not to the extent that you could scan someone's brain and be like, oh, you have PTSD.
I mean, maybe, but like, Maybe, but it's just more of a noticeable trend that we've seen, right?
Yeah,
and when I say smaller, it's not like, oh, they've got a tiny little shriveled brain.
Pathetic.
No, it's just that when you like, there, obviously your brain is a physical thing, right?
Yeah.
So you have more connections, and different parts of your brain grow or are larger because of, like, you know, basically sort of stimulation. So that's kind of what that is. That's kind of the idea there, right? That you can see these physical changes in the brain because of the different ways that it is sort of activating, particularly to sort of, like, increase fear and anxiety and all of these things. And if you treat PTSD, you process the memories, so over time the flashbacks and nightmares can gradually disappear. So let's just quickly talk about PTSD in the brain. So I have a whole thing here, but basically I think the sort of the summary of it that I really want to get across to you is that your brain develops throughout your life, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously it's mostly done growing and developing when you're born.
Yeah.
But there's still a lot of development to go, right? So a baby is sort of different from a child, is different from an adolescent, is different from an adult, and even different stages of adulthood, your brain, there are sort of somewhat noticeable differences in brains. So PTSD at different times can sort of change your brain, right?
Oh, so like if you experience it as a baby, it would probably present differently than if you experience it as a child or as a teenager.
Yeah,
like,
it can affect the development of the brain, essentially, right?
But you said it affected people that it happened early on in their life in a more dramatic way.
It can affect you more deeply.
Yeah.
So let's just quickly go over treatment. So essentially it's confronting the feelings that is most of the treatment to PTSD. Not by yourself. Go to a professional. Do that. Speak to a professional. It is possible for PTSD to be treated like a long time after the event. Successfully.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it is possible for you to, like, if you haven't had treatment in, say, like, 5 years since the event, you can still have successful treatment.
Does it get harder to do as time goes on?
Well, it doesn't necessarily say that. I mean, obviously, like, the longer you have, like, you let the symptoms kind of sort of
fester
out of hand,
mm-hmm.
yeah, the more entrenched you're going to be. So it could be harder, but that's, it literally says on the NHS website, it's never too late to seek help. Like,
don't be like,
oh, it's going to be too hard. Like, always sort of go out there for it.
Have you got anything about MDMA treatment of PTSD on there?
I don't have anything about MDMA treatment of PTSD.
Oh, it's really interesting.
It's probably, I know that MDMA, chemically, in the way that it interacts with the brain, is similar to antidepressants, which is why if you're ever, don't do MDMA, but if you do MDMA, don't do it on antidepressants.
Serotonin syndrome. Yeah,
if you're listening to me and thinking, Corey doesn't know what he's talking about, I'm cool, I'm going to do it anyway. First off, drugs aren't cool. Second off, yeah, Google serotonin syndrome and then, yeah, scare yourself.
Do you just use up all your serotonin?
No, it melts your muscles.
Oh, okay, cool, cool. I didn't know that was it. Fun.
Yeah. Well, not just melts your muscles, it'll mess you up in
other ways. It will also use up all your serotonin.
Okay.
But it'll melt your muscles. Yeah.
Oh, you should.
That's terrifying.
You should have looked up the MDMA stuff because it's really,
I mean,
drastically improves it.
We can absolutely do it as another episode. This is just kind of
do it.
This is just like a sort of overview of, because I mean, obviously, whenever we do these topics like OCD or PTSD or DID, there is always room for more. Because we barely scratch the surface, right? Like there is so much more to these. I've actually got two studies here that I want to talk about at the end that are just briefly that I find really interesting.
Mm.
So, in terms of treatment, there's two main kinds of treatment. There is the therapy and there is medicine. Therapy, I think, I'm fairly sure is like sort of the most effective treatment.
Surely, therapy and medication is the most effective treatment. Like a mix of both.
If you're, I'm saying that, like, it's better to have therapy.
Oh, than just drugs.
Therapy on its own than just drugs on their own.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there's two main kinds of therapy. There's
CBT.
Yeah, CBT.
Really?
It's always CBT.
CBT to treat PTSD.
Yes.
Surely is that just isn't CBT just CB? Is that not just like recognizing your feelings and being like, this is sadness.
Changing your behavior patterns, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah.
I feel like...
Cognitive behavioral therapy, it's recognizing the patterns of thought and altering your actions such that, and your behavior such that it doesn't lead you down that sort of negative route.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it can be helpful for PTSD. I mean, because I think the main sort of takeaway for the treatment for PTSD is essentially sort of like...
Confronting
those issues, yeah. Oh. And it says here that essentially... with CBT, your therapist can help you get control of sort of fear and anxiety, and kind of really get to the heart of like any of those sort of like conclusions that you've drawn about the experience. So like if you've got survivor's guilt, like you sort of blame yourself, or you worry about like, oh, like why did it happen to me, sort of thing. And it can force you to sort of, not force you, but like help you to start doing things that you've isolated yourself from. Because remember, all of these symptoms of PTSD, they're really similar to depression, some of them, right? Mm. The sort of isolation, the anxiety, like all of those different things. So usually you'll get 8 to 12 weekly sessions of trauma-focused CBT, but you might need fewer than that. There's also medication. Like I said before, it's basically antidepressants. Two of them that are specifically licensed for PTSD, and two of them that are more off-label. And there are two that you can use if you don't want to, if you don't want to have treatment. So the mirtazapine and the amitriptyline and the phenelzine. There's five. Not four.
Yeah, they all got these silly names.
Yeah. So there's basically three of them will only be used if you choose not to have the CBT, or if psychological treatment wouldn't be effective because there's
too much going on.
The trauma's continuing.
All right.
Yeah. So they see here domestic violence. So like, oh, we can't get you out of the situation. There's still a threat of it happening. So medication, maybe. No.
Arrest.
No therapy.
Arrest. Arrest the...
A little rest, yeah, that'd help. No, a little nap.
Arrest.
Yeah, arrest.
The person doing it.
Yeah, the person that's doing the trauma has a little rest.
Very funny.
Yeah. No, genuinely. Arresting the person. Like, it is mental.
Mm.
Look into how many police officers in America...
beat their wives?
Beat their wives, yeah, domestic abuse. Yeah.
Oh, God.
A lot.
I think any is too many, right?
Yeah.
But like a disproportionate to the rest of people, just a disproportionate amount.
Honestly, I think even having a lower percentage than the general population would be bad. But yeah, I think I'm fairly sure it's a disproportionate amount. Look it up. I mean, whatever the number is, I'm sure it will shock you, because it didn't shock me. It was not nice to see. But yeah, medicine for PTSD can be effective basically dealing with the associated symptoms rather than actually dealing with the trauma itself.
Yeah.
And obviously if you're not feeling depressed, you're not feeling like a sort of like nihilistic, like you want to isolate yourself, that can help you to deal with the trauma better, right? So it can be that kind of support that you need. There's also, there's also like a sort of therapy that is more sort of like exposure therapy, exposing yourself to, it's not specifically called that, but sort of exposing yourself to the trauma in a sort of safe environment, to not be so deeply affected.
That's how they treat phobias, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, it is how they treat phobias. It was one of the ways they treat phobias. Yeah, and yeah, that's essentially pretty much it for PTSD. That's the overview.
God.
Yeah, it's tough.
That's the overview.
I hope you guys enjoyed it. If you want us to do it again in more depth, sure, go to Patreon and vote for it. That's the only... I am not doing this topic again unless it's voted for on Patreon, okay?
You should
PTSD
do...
2.
I don't know if you want to put it on camera. You should do an episode about like psychedelic treatment and MDMA treatment of mental illnesses.
Yeah.
And like the end-of-life stuff for shrooms. Because they drastically improved like old people's quality of life by like 80%.
Yeah, no, but we've spoken about that before. Definitely on the podcast before. A whole episode about it would be really cool. I think honestly... It could be, each thing could be an episode of itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like looking into it, it's super, super interesting. And it's insane how much we've been held back by...
the war on drugs.
Thank you. Was it Reagan?
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, so. Reagan.
Yeah.
Not only did you manage to kill the gays, you also managed to Kill the mentally ill too.
I just can't believe weed is illegal and alcohol is legal. That makes no sense. You can die from alcohol.
It actually doesn't make sense. Like, this is not me. This is not me endorsing any of these things, because honestly, I would say don't drink. Like, don't drink. But having been to, when we went to California, the difference between drinking, like sort of the drinking culture of the UK and the way people smoke weed in California.
Yeah.
Is
they don't go out and beat the shit out of people after smoking a bit. They kind of just wander around, eat some food, and chill out.
Imagine people getting high, like football games, right, in the UK. You wouldn't have people rioting. They'd just be like,
"Be so oh, merry." Man.
It'd be such a delayed reaction for girls.
Yeah,
next like, time.
Oh, it's gone.
Oh, yeah, we did it, man. Yeah.
Did we win?
And also, it would really help the economy, not only through the taxes on the weed itself, but, you know, lots of small food places would absolutely go through. Taco Bell, for example, would experience a significant rise.
Every kebab shop.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, kebab shops obviously get drunk people, right? But yeah. I feel like high people will eat more than drunk people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Munchies, right?
Yeah. And you have fewer people vomiting on the streets.
You can still get sick from weed, right?
You can whitey, yes. Yeah. But I think it's less.
I've never seen anyone
sick
do it.
From.
Yeah.
I've seen lots of people throw up after drinking alcohol.
Yeah.
Oh lots.
Yeah, like, yes, yeah. It's horrible.
Yeah. I mean, and the effect that alcohol has on your body. Oh, gosh.
Long term damage to your liver.
Again, if this is like if you are somewhere where marijuana is legal, remember that if you're under the age of 25, it's probably best to avoid it, or at the very least use it incredibly, incredibly sparingly, because it can have developmental impacts on your brain, and you don't want that.
You're not gonna.
If you're gonna use legal drugs, use them safely, in a way that does not impact your body negatively.
The same if you're doing illegal drugs, you shouldn't do them, but if you are doing them. Do them safely.
I think that's good advice.
Yeah.
So just to round us off, there are two little studies that I want to briefly talk about PTSD. There was a study that I found that was interesting talking about PTSD, and it's called post-traumatic stress disorder, a differential diagnosis consideration for COVID-19 survivors.
Oh.
Basically, the idea is recent. That people that have survived COVID-19 are probably going to get PTSD. And there are impacts that COVID-19 has on your body. Neurophysiological deficits, it says here. Impacting your brain, or through like the strokes that could be caused, mm-hmm. or the intubation that you get. And this is essentially sort of laying out a method, I think, to sort of differentiate between the sort of PTSD from having COVID and the deficits from like having COVID.
Yeah.
Right. So what's psychological and what is caused by the virus and intubation and all of those other sort of more physical things. So that was an interesting one. That's something that we don't think about. I think that, yeah, there's going to be like a significant rise in mental illness once this pandemic is over.
Well, there's going to be a whole generation of people that will be like the most traumatic times of their life.
Yeah.
But it's still like the shared experience that everybody has. It's like the war.
Yeah.
Like it's how old people look back and be like, oh, I remember the war.
I feel like we're lucky because none of us remember 9/11. Like there are people now who remember 9/11 and are also young and like fairly young and went through the trauma of a pandemic as well.
God.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. There's also another one. This is a fun little one. I thought it'd be nice to end. Effects of therapeutic horseback riding on post-traumatic stress disorder in military veterans. So they had military veterans ride on horses. And it decreased their so they were doing basically I think it was basically sort of let's call it like a sort of survey for your sort of determine the extent of your mental PTSD symptoms.
Yeah.
And apparently it had a positive effect.
Regularly riding horses.
So let's see.
That's nice.
So this was a sort of randomized control randomized trial. So what they did, let's see, they had 29 people, they did it, I think.
That's fuck all.
I know.
Sorry for swearing.
But it's a small trial to like sort of
You wouldn't put lots and lots of money into that, really.
Mm. No. Horse, no, no. I'm not saying that horseback riding helps military veterans. I'm saying that this study. Those are the results of this study. So they had 15 that were a part of the horse riding group and 14 that were on the wait list. The wait list had a 6-week waiting period while the horse riding group started riding horses. It doesn't actually say there in what I've got here how often they were riding horses, but I think it was probably.
I rode a horse, bro. It changed my life.
No, so it was over the course of, it was over a period of 6 weeks that they were riding horses. Yeah. They were horse riding regularly.
No, it's just like the opposite of trauma. It's like the single-handedly, like the best experience of their life is riding
horses. It just overpowers
horse.
The trauma. Entirely. Yeah. This is so good.
So, so there was a good, there were good results. So emotional loneliness apparently went in the opposite direction from where they predicted. But there was solid percentages of like having lower PTSD scores after 3 weeks and then after 6 weeks. So 66.7% likelihood of having a lower PTSD score after three weeks, and 87.5% likelihood at 6 weeks.
That's decent.
It doesn't necessarily say that it's a massive, massive drop, but there was after 6 weeks there was a clinically and statistically significant drop. So it was.
How much of it do you think is like, ooh, horsey, or how much do you think is it like, oh, here's something to look forward to every week, and here's something that's keeping my schedule.
I think it's that.
Makes of ooh, horsey as well.
Yeah. Like, I mean, look, when it comes to for me in terms of mental health, going to the gym.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Going to the gym is great, not just because of like actually working out,
getting
but
hot,
the going to the
attractive.
Gym, going to the gym itself. Just the ritual,
the routine
feels great, right? Mm-hmm. Like you've got to get dressed to go to the gym, then you walk to the gym, and then you do the gym, and then you come back home, and then you can have a nice meal. Whereas when we were in lockdown and we had all the gym stuff at home,
no motivation to use that.
Even though it's the same workout with the same weights and all of the same stuff, it does not feel the same because you're doing it in your living room.
Yeah,
and it's just like ugh,
it's not exciting.
Awful, right? No. Yeah. So if you were riding a horse in your living room, I'm sure it probably wouldn't feel
get dressed
quite
and go downstairs.
Nice. Even if you had like the weird tippy toey horses, right? No.
I feel bad for them.
I know. Right?
Yeah, I don't. Do the horses want to do that?
I don't know. Fun fact, though, all horses are walking on their toes. In fact, most animals walk on their toes. Humans and apes are weird for walking flat on their feet. Most animals. Walking their toes, even elephants, walk on their toes. They walk on their tiptoes, and they've got a sort of soft pad that they put their weight on as well.
Horses just have one big toe? Isn't that
four? No, they don't.
Well, on each leg.
No, one so big horses. One horses, you got to think of as they don't really have the thumbs, so they're like kind of like this. Right. If you're
oh,
not
watching, because they got that ankle joint.
Okay, so where? Okay, right. Here's the thing: when you look at a horse, what you think is its knee isn't its knee; that's its heel.
Yes, because it goes.
Same with most birds.
It goes out quite far.
Yeah. With most birds, I think what you think is their what you think is their knee is their ankle.
Yeah.
Which is why a lot of birds' legs bend backwards.
Backwards. Yeah. It's not a knee.
Yeah, because it's not a knee. Yeah. Yeah. Look at animal. God, look at animal anatomy. So interesting. So interesting. Like, because we think of human anatomy, and we're like, oh, this is you can just apply that to any animal. No.
Nope.
No, I don't like looking at human anatomy.
Well, yeah, it's because you got, all right. You got your own weird
stuff. I had this moment the other day. I was like, I don't like how my elbow works. Like, these are just two bones.
Don't do that.
They're just two bones.
Yeah.
Your radius and ulna crossover when you...
Yeah, when you twist your arm.
Oh, yeah. I saw a picture of that.
The bones change position. Yeah.
Is it the radius and ulna?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like it. No, because I refuse to believe that happens. I don't care. No one can prove it.
It's just this, isn't it? And then but your bones are like, ooh.
Your bones essentially
like cross.
Like this. And like you could have a live x-ray of my arm and show me doing it.
Yeah.
I would not believe you.
I just don't like
you could excavate all of my flesh and make me look at my bones as they do
like a little window.
Yeah. I would not believe you still.
No.
Like that I can just hold my bone. You can wrap your finger around my bone.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Well, now that we're done with that is PTSD. So it's time for my favorite part of the show. It's the quickfire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun.
Now, as you both know, there are only a few rules to the quickfire quiz. What the rules are these. I will ask you both a question, one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in and answer the question correctly wins. And you have to wait till I finish asking the question before you can buzz in with the correct answer. Otherwise, you won't win. But if you do win, what do they win?
Nothing.
Praise.
No.
Glory.
No, a round nothing. Of applause.
No. Oh. You get a square of applause and that is it.
A little woo.
A little woo.
Give me a little woo.
You get a little woo. A little Jimmy woo. There you go.
Very good.
Aww.
Ask so, the question.
That's the best prize.
Do you know how I was saying so? My question is for
go.
You.
Go, go.
Is not going to happen until you tell me what your buzzers are.
Yeah.
Jan, what's your buzzer?
Oh no, there's no good sound effects that come from PTSD.
Great buzzer. Noah, what's your buzzer?
Ah!
Apart from that one, that's a pretty good one.
God, oh no, this sucks.
My mind went straight to like a gunshot sound or something. I was like, no, that's insensitive.
So my question for both of you today is, what does PTSD stand for?
There's no good sounds for PTSD.
You kind of did it. You did it first, but you did it before I finished asking the question. So, Jam.
You're throwing to me.
I'll throw it to you. What's the answer?
Post-traumatic stress disorder.
Woo. Well
You're
done.
Not getting a woot woot.
Where's my
You get
woo?
A little woot.
You get no
little
woot. Woot.
A little woot.
I take away your woots as well.
Where's my little Jimmy woo?
You get a little Jimmy woo. Woo. You'll get a little Jimmy woo after the show.
Yes, thank you.
You should have said woo. So... With that, Jimmy. we do want to thank our patrons who bring these shows to you. And if you want to see us cover anything else to do with PTSD, head over to our Patreon, patreon.com/SciGuys, where you can submit the episode topic, you can vote on topics, you can get bonus episodes every month, you can see every single episode of SciGuys live whenever you so choose. You can even get little maybe bonus clips every now and then. And we're close to hitting 200 patrons. So when we hit 200 patrons, we're going to do a very special patron live stream. Well, a live stream for everyone, but our patrons can call in. And we also might be announcing something at that little live stream. So definitely head over to patreon.com/SciGuys right now and be one of the it's only about six people or so before we hit 200.
That's pretty close.
Yeah, so if you want a very special live stream, go to our Patreon. But now it is time.
Not only
to...
did you tease something, but the tease had another tease in it.
Yeah, it's like double tease.
It's like Inception.
But now I think it's time to thank all of our new patrons.
Yes, who are they?
Well, first we have Celine Vault.
Thank you to Jordan Bone. What a great name.
That's great. Thank you to Ryan Lloyd Hughes.
Thank you to Dara Simpson.
Thank you to Alex Angel Cutie.
Thank you to Bex Harper.
Thank you to Tristan Prado.
Thank you to Lily.
Thank you to Tori Cuso H.
Thank you to Emily Laws.
Thank you to Ruby Khan.
Thank you to Olivia.
Thank you to Margarita Bilova.
Thank you to Emma.
Thank you to Juliet Garin.
Thank you to Alyssa.
Thank you to RLW.
And thank you to, last but not least, Blake Webb.
And before we go, we would like to thank all of our patrons, not just the new ones, but with a very special thank you to executive producers Ashley Muller and Finn TZ. And also, thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday, and why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find the contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod.
@gmail.com. You can follow me at NotCore everywhere.
You can follow me at Champkin everywhere.
You can follow me at NoFence everywhere, apart from on Twitter where it's NoFin Adams, and on TikTok where it's the NoFence.
Very succinct.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.